nevertheless affords delight. All goods, however, ought properly to be free from blame. They are pure, they do not corrupt the spirit, and they do not tempt us. They do indeed uplift and broaden the spirit, but without puffing it up. Those things which are goods produce confidence, but riches produce shamelessness. The things which are goods give us greatness of soul, but riches give us arrogance. And arrogance is nothing else than a false show of greatness. According to that argument, the objector says, riches are not only not a good, but are a positive evil. Now, they would be an evil if they did harm of themselves, and if, as I remarked, it were the efficient cause which inheres in them. In fact, however, it is the antecedent cause which inheres in riches, and indeed it is that cause which, so far from merely arousing the spirit, actually drags it along by force. Yes, riches shower upon us a semblance of the good, which is like the reality, and wins credence in the eyes of many men. The antecedent cause inheres in virtue also. It is this which brings on envy. For many men become unpopular because of their wisdom, and many men because of their justice. But this cause, though it inheres in virtue, is not the result of virtue itself, nor is it a mere semblance of the reality. Nay, on the contrary, far more like the reality is that vision which is flashed by virtue upon the spirits of men, summoning them to love it and marvel thereat. Posidonius thinks that the syllogism should be framed as follows. Things which bestow upon the soul no greatness or confidence or freedom from care are not goods. But riches and health and similar conditions do none of these things. Therefore, riches and health are not goods. This syllogism he then goes on to extend still farther in the following way. Things which bestow upon the soul no greatness or confidence or freedom from care, but on the other hand create in it arrogance, vanity, and insolence, are evils. But things which are the gift of fortune drive us into these evil ways. Therefore, these things are not goods. But, says the objector, by such reasoning, things which are the gifts of fortune will not even be advantages. No, advantages and goods stand each in a different situation. An advantage is that which contains more of usefulness than of annoyance. But a good ought to be unmixed and with no element in it of harmfulness. A thing is not good if it contains more benefit than injury, but only if it contains nothing but benefit. Besides, advantages may be predicated of animals, of men who are less than perfect, and of fools. Hence the advantageous may have an element of disadvantage mingled with it, but the word advantageous is used of the compound because it is judged by its predominant element. The good, however, can be predicated of the wise man alone. It is bound to be without alloy. Be of good cheer. There is only one knot left for you to untangle, though it is a knot for a Hercules. Good does not result from evil, but riches result from numerous cases of poverty. Therefore, riches are not a good. This syllogism is not recognized by our school, but the Peripatetics both concoct it and give its solution. Posidonius, however, remarks that this fallacy, which has been bandied about among all the schools of dialectic, is refuted by Antipater as follows. The word poverty is used to denote not the possession of something, but the non-possession or, as the ancients have put it, deprivation. For the Greeks used the phrase by deprivation, meaning negatively. Poverty states not what a man has, but what he has not. Consequently, there can be no fullness resulting from a multitude of voids. Many positive things and not many deficiencies make up riches. You have, says he, a wrong notion of the meaning of what poverty is. For poverty does not mean the possession of little, but the non-possession of much. It is used, therefore, not of what a man has, but of what he lacks. I could express my meaning more easily if there were a Latin word which could translate the Greek word which means not possessing. Antipater assigns this quality to poverty. But, for my part, I cannot see what else poverty is than the possession of little. If ever we have plenty of leisure, we shall investigate the question. What is the essence of riches, and what the essence of poverty? But when the time comes, we shall also consider whether it is not better to try to mitigate poverty and to relieve wealth of its arrogance, than to quibble about the words as if the question of the things was already decided. Let us suppose that we have been summoned to an assembly. An act dealing with the abolition of riches has been brought before the meeting. Shall we be supporting it or opposing it if we use these syllogisms? Will these syllogisms help us to bring it about that the Roman people shall demand poverty and praise it? Poverty, the foundation and cause of their empire, and, on the other hand, shall shrink in fear from their present wealth, reflecting that they have found it among the victims of their conquests. That wealth is the source from which office-seeking and bribery and disorder have burst into a city once characterized by the